CBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words. And those taking part are Nancy Spain, Phyllis Powell, Dennis Norden, and Frank Muir. Round one tries to test their vocabulary. Two marks if they give me the meaning of the following words. Beginning with Nancy Spain, what is a wiseacre?
Somebody who knows everything.
Not quite.
Or thinks he knows.
Yes, that's more. He's a sententious dullard who assumes an air of wisdom, but is basically very much more simple.
Sounds really like a bad wisdom tooth.
Yes, I think that hurts a bit more. Frank Muir, yours. The meaning of the word scroop, S-C-R-O-O-P, scroop.
Scroop? Scroop?
It's a verb to help you.
Ah, yes. It's a nautical thing. You know, he popped onto the poop, scooped, and popped off again.
The captain would have objected.
It's a scraper for scraping the scoop. A scoop is a scraper for scraping the poop.
You're very nearly there. You stick to that line, and I'll give you some marks.
Well, I've stuck to it. Give me the marks. it's a poop scraper.
All right, I'll give you 1 out of 2 for the poop scraper, which isn't quite right. It's to make a grating, scratching, teeth-setting-on-edge noise. 1 out of 2. Lewis Powell, what is heart's horn?
It's a reviver.
Yes, it is.
It's a heart's horn ground up.
Mm-hmm. And what do you call it when it is ground up and it revives you?
Smelling salts.
It isn't originally that. It's a substance distilled from the horns of the heart or the young deer, but in its impure, carbonate or solid form, it is smelling salts. You get it too, I think. Dennis Norden, what is a cross buttock?
Well, that would be the design left on a nudist who sat on a scrooper. No, it's one of these wrestling terms, which are all rather weird. Yes, it's a wrestling throw or hold.
Yes, throw.
Throw.
It's a throw over the hip, using the hip as lever in wrestling. I think probably Cumberland rather than Cornish. I'm not certain about that.
Mm. I use it in the foxtrot quite a bit.
Well, before we start round two, I give each team a quotation which they can write down, and I want the two women members of the team to study their quotations, and at the end, I shall ask them for the source that they come from. Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden, here's your quotation. Save me, oh save me, from the candid friend. And Dillis Bauer with Frank Muir, your quotation is, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And then at the end of the program, I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their ideas of how these words came to be said or written, and I don't want any of these answers just yet. And so round two. Each of the following writers became pretty famous for their works, and for 2 marks, I want to know what was the title of their first book. Beginning with Nancy Spain. Nancy, Ernest Hemingway.
Very first book?
Yep.
The Sun Also Rises.
Quite right.
Also known as Fiesta.
Well done.
Which is silly because it's a ferry.
I'm going to give you a bonus mark, Nancy. The title originally, as published in America, was The Sun Also Rises, but when it was published in England, it came under the title of Fiesta. It was all about bullfighting and all sorts of other funny things. Mm. Frank Muir. James Thurber.
Oh. It was one he wrote when he was a reporter on The New Yorker.
That's it.
He wrote it in collaboration with somebody white.
Yes, quite right.
I can't remember his Christian name. It's called Is Sex Necessary?
Well, that's jolly good. Is Sex Necessary? Written by James Thurber in collaboration with E.B. White, and I don't know his Christian name either. And then, Dillis Power, H.G. Wells.
Kipps.
No, that was much later.
Love and Mr. Lewisham.
No. Now, the first one was The Time Machine.
Ah.
All right, Dennis Norden. The first work of F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Oh. Now, wait a minute. It's not Tender as the Night. Was it This Side of Paradise?
Yes, quite right. Well done, Dennis. And get very hard. Well, then we have a round all about origins and derivations, and I have to mark it as best I can up to a possible maximum of 3 marks. What I want to know is the present meaning of the phrase and how it originated. Nancy Spain, in the doldrums.
Well, in the doldrums, there's no wind, Jack, and there are these bits of the earth outside of the trade winds.
Yes.
Like in between southwest wind of the 45th year, whatever, sort of east west of the beginning.
Yes, that's pretty accurate.
And the Caribbean will do very well for
Caribbean wouldn't do too badly at all.
And it's terrible, actually. The sail flaps all day long, and there's no water, and they've all got scurvy. And,
oh, I see. It's that kind of water, yes.
Yes.
To drink,
and
yes.
Oh, lorks.
No, you're doing terribly well, Nancy. I'll give you at least 2 marks there.
That's good.
But tell me what the present meaning of the phrase is, to be in the doldrums.
Oh, it means that you haven't got a hope.
Yes.
Not a hope, you know. The bank manager has foreclosed on your overdraft. And,
yes. Well, before there are any more personal revelations, I'll give you 3 marks out of 3, Nancy, and well done. It means being thoroughly in the dumps and dejected. And Nancy's quite right. It's a bit inconveniently round the curve of the world between the northeast and the southeast trade winds round about the equator, where ships become becalmed or are bemused by very light and baffling winds. Frank Muir, to try it on the dog.
Oh. It means to experiment on an inferior person.
Yes.
It's presumably from food tasting.
Yes.
And they ran out of slaves or volunteers to taste the food. They tried it on the domestic animals.
Why?
To see whether their back arched after 5 minutes of the steak and kidney pie, and if so, they didn't eat it.
All right, fair enough, Frank. 3 out of 3, that's good enough. Tell us, Paul, a bistro. B-I-S-T-R-O.
A bistro is a sort of small bar in Paris frequented by left bank characters.
Yes. What happens there?
You drink.
Yes.
There's a drop to drink.
Yes. And
I even have a coffee too.
You can have that's important. You can have both coffee and alcohol.
Mm.
Not necessarily together. And how does the name originate?
It means bistro, twice too much.
A jolly fella.
I know the answer to this.
I'm going to give you an extra half mark for that.
I know the answer to this.
Can I help?
Yes, Harry Rabinowitz, who was the musical director on Take It From Here when we
That's
used to do
like
it, he's taught himself Russian. And it's the Russian for, please may I have a plate of food quickly.
Absolutely right. So Dennis Norden, why is a coward called a coward?
Does it come from an Anglo-Saxon word?
No, I don't. It's French.
The lines of Quidad Rodrigo.
Quidad Rodrigo. Careful, Roderick.
That's how you do with Wellington, not Napoleon. I get mixed.
Well, it can't be
Latin. Napoleon will do.
Because it's got a W in it, and they don't have W in Latin.
God, that might be a mistake. It might be a...
No, stick to the Latin and the Italian, and then from there to the French. Nothing to do with Anglo-Saxon at all.
I do a bit of Russian as well. I might delve off into Swedish. Stay with me. Right.
I did.
Kovad. So that would be in Latin. It would be C-O-V?
No.
No.
Think of coda.
Codpiece, yeah.
No, coda.
No,
coda.
Think of coda. The end bit.
Yes, the end bit.
Well, if you're a coward, you show your end bit to your enemies.
That's right.
Rather than... Yes.
1.5 out of 3, because I gave a fair amount of help. It comes from the Latin corda, which means a tail, and cowardice is shown either by turning tail, or if you're that particular kind of animal, by tucking your tail between your legs. And, in fact, in heraldry, a lion is referred to as cowarded if its tail is shown on the shield, or whatever it is, between its legs. Well, the next round is the who and what department. For 2 marks, who or what is being referred to in the lines I'm going to quote, and 1 extra mark for naming the writer who wrote them. Nancy Spain. She saw her brother Peterkin roll something large and round, which he beside the rivulet in playing there had found.
Well, it was my little sister Wilhelmine who rolled the thing.
Yes.
And old Casper's work was done.
That's all the thing, yes.
And he before his cottage door. Well, what do you want to know exactly?
I want to know what it was he was rolling, and it's rather...
It was a skull, my dear.
You're quite right.
Mm.
And who wrote it? After Blenheim.
After Blenheim, Southey.
Yes, quite right. Well done, Nancy. "'Tis some poor fellow's skull," said he, "who fell in that great victory." Robert Southey, After Blenheim. Frank Miller, 2 lines which I won't quote because they've given it away, and then I go on.
Oh, Charlie.
I go on, Frank. "Her eyes were deeper than the depth of waters stilled at even." And if you wanted to call it Evan, I wouldn't mind.
The Blessed Damozel.
Yes.
Christina Rossetti.
No, the other one.
Oh, Dante Gabriel.
Well done. Now, Dillis Bower. "She's coming, my own, my sweet, where it ever so airy a tread, my heart would hear her and beat, were it earth in an earthy bed." Ah, who?
Maud.
By?
Alfred Lord Tennyson.
About?
Maud.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. A very sort of torrid poem by Lord Tennyson about Maud, who wanted to come out into the garden. 3 marks out of 3. Dennis Norton. "For every time she shouted fire, they only answered little liar."
Well, that's Cautionary Verses.
Mm-hmm.
Hilaire Belloc.
Yes.
And it's... Is it Matilda?
Yes.
Matilda.
Matilda, who told such dreadful lies, it made one gasp and stretch one's eyes. Well, then the next round is about mystery thrillers, which are thought to be classics of their kind. I want to know who wrote them. Nancy Spain, The Maltese Falcon.
Dashiell Hammett.
Quite right. Who also wrote...
Oh, come on, Jack.
No, I thought...
The Glass Key.
Oh, sorry, no, you know too much. I meant The Thin Man. 2 marks, Nancy, well done. Frank Miller, The Lady in the Lake.
Eileen Dover. My children have comics with little jokes along the top.
Don't laugh at them.
They're our bread and butter.
Raymond Chandler lived
there. Yes, Raymond Chandler is the answer we prefer. 2 marks. Dennis Bower, A Study in Scarlet.
We should know
Sherlock
that.
Sherlock Holmes, Conan Doyle.
Quite right. 2 marks. And Dennis Norden, The Postman Always Rings Twice.
James M. Cain.
Quite right. 2 marks it is. I'm surprised, because in England the postman's supposed to knock. In America he apparently rings.
Yeah.
Curious thing. Well, now we come to the final round, and we go back to the quotations I gave the 2 teams earlier on the programme, and I want to know the origins of those quotations. First, Nancy Spain, your quotation was, "Save me, oh, save me, from the candid friend."
I don't know.
Well, it's George Canning, who was Foreign Secretary and later Prime Minister, but also wrote a fair amount of verse. Now, Dillis Powell, here is your quotation. "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy."
It's a proverb.
Yes.
Is that enough?
Not quite. It doesn't come in the Book of Proverbs, is that what you mean?
No, 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 it's not biblical. No, it's, I believe, it's a character called Ray.
Yes, he's the wrong one. It was Thomas Fuller,
oh,
who also wrote Fuller's Worthies, but he wrote a book with a Latin title called Nomologia, and this was the one in which this proverb appeared.
He also wrote a book on geography, didn't he? Earth.
There's Pearl S. Fuller. Well, now, I shall ask Dennis Norden and Frank Muir for their explanation of how these words came to be said or written, and on this occasion the marks will be given to whichever unlikely explanation arises the longer and perhaps louder applause in the audience here in the studio. So back to Dennis Norden and his quotation, which was, "Save me, oh save me, from the candid friend."
I wonder if any of you have had a lady so in love with you that she threw herself into a vat of warm, transparent toffee. Now, this happened to me when I was very young, and I was working for a factory that made petit four, for the benefit of those people who have to avoid calories and may have forgotten, petit four are not the opposite of plus four. They are little sweetmeats that restaurants serve with coffee, and the ones we made took the form of slices of tangerine or grapes that were dipped into transparent toffee. And I was actually in charge of the tangerine department. We had this enormous vat of warm, transparent toffee, and people used to come along with slices of tangerine and throw them in, and we allowed them to stay in there until they glistened, and then we'd pull them out with sort of large shrimping nets, and they'd be rushed along to a refrigerated room till they were hardened to the consistency that would just set your fillings shrieking. And then they would be rushed in lorries to the coffee tables of millions. Well, I was in charge of this, as I say. It was quite an everyday sort of job, except for this expanse of winking, bubbling toffee and Hilda, who was another winking, bubbling expanse. She was a large lady. I was very young at that time, about three times my age, and very sweet tooth. In fact, I think that was why she was attracted to me. When I was young, I had a very big head and a very long, thin body. It may have been associated with toffee apples, but there was something that drew me to her, or drew her to me. I felt nothing in return. I was at the age when I wasn't, you know how you are at 17, you're not really very interested in women. Well, you're thinking about girls all the time, you see. And so she made all sorts of advances, which I ignored. I didn't even know they were advances at that age. You're a bit silly then. And it would have gone on and on. I thought she might despair, but suddenly one day I heard a splash, and there she was in this enormous vat of transparent toffee, which was warm, it wasn't hot, and I panicked and sort of pulled her out, and there she lay motionless and with her eyes closed. I didn't know what to do, and so I started applying artificial respiration, pumping her arms up and down. She just sort of gasped, "No, no, the kiss of life." So I gave her the kiss of life for about 25 minutes. It probably would have gone on longer, but we heard the foreman approaching, and she suddenly recovered. Well, I thought nothing of it, one of those miraculous escapes she'd had, till the next day, around about 3 o'clock, splash. She was in the warm, transparent toffee again, you see. This time, kiss of life took about 3/4 of an hour. Do you know, it went on every day. From then, splash. Warm, transparent toffee, kiss of life. We got practically no work done. Finally, I began to suspect she might be doing it purposely. So I said to her, "Hilda, you must realize there is a possibility that this slipping into the vat of warm, transparent toffee might be a sort of psychosomatic slipping. If it is, I must tell you that we can be nothing more than good friends." And she said, "Yes, oh yes, I perfectly understand that." Splash. Well, 6 months later, I could stand it no more. By this time, she was sort of permanently coated with thin, transparent toffee, which was the reason, probably, why I used the adjective in the memo that I sent to the personnel manager, which said, "Save me, oh save me, from the candied friend."
puts a gloss on the word sweetie. Mm. And we'll go on to Frank Muir. And if you remember, his quotation was, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Ah, yes. Yes, I said that quotation quite recently. Those of the listeners who are avid listeners to this program, I mean, probably both of them remember that occasionally I talked about having a boat. Well, I did have a boat. I had a boat for 5 years, but I've got it no longer. Because, rather unfortunately, it turned turtle. It fell off a lorry. You see, it was being brought up from the south coast, and the lorry took a corner rather swiftly. My boat rolled off the lorry, and it was a complete write-off. So this was rather embarrassing to me, because actually I was going to let Jack Longland have the use of the boat that summer as a sort of birthday present, you see, because our markings were getting a bit rough this side of the table, and I don't want you to think, you know, that I was attempting to influence him in any way. I mean, the last thing I'd do. I tried everything else, and that was the last thing that left. You know, it wasn't influence at all. It was just, what's the word, a bribery, really. And I thought that if I gave him the use of the boat in the summer, it would be, you know, it would favour. He would favour our side. But now I had no boat. So I sent, it was Bobber Job week. So I sent the Boy Scouts along. There were, 18 in the local troop with 3 trek carts. So I sent them along to collect, to salvage what was left of the wreckage and bring it home. Naturally, I looked after them. I paid them well above the price. I sent the scoutmaster a cheque for 1 and 6. And they'd returned with the boat wheel and the propeller and 2 oak planks. That was all that was left worth saving. How to make a birthday present for Jack out of this? Well, I used my head. I didn't panic. I took the ship's wheel and I sawed all the 10 knobbly spokes off. I thought of sending those to him as 10 spare tin opener handles. But it didn't ring, you know, it didn't seem a very nice present. Then I thought of sending him the propeller from the boat, saying, here, for your birthday, I thought you'd rather like a spare washing machine agitator. But that sort of didn't make sense, so I just had to do something with these 2 oak planks. Now, they were 1¼ inches thick, and none of the plywood, of course, was saved. It was just these solid oak planks. What to do with 2 oak planks? I thought, well, Jack smokes a lot. What if one day he'd like to smoke a salmon? Because when you smoke salmon, you smoke it over oak chips. So immediately I grabbed a plank and ran along to our local fried fish shop. And I put the plank under the chipper. He's an awful nice chap. He didn't mind. And I swung the handle down. But it doesn't make chips, you know, out of an oak plank at all. It just sort of bent the handle and made no impression on the oak at all. So the oak chips was out. And I thought and thought and thought. And I thought that Jack's, you know, sort of fairly sporty chap, perhaps water skis. So I made these 2 planks into water skis. So I sawed the corners off to make the pointed end. Then, of course, I had to bend them up. Well, I heaved and strained. I couldn't bend them at all. Then I went down to the bottom of the garden and I wedged the pointed end under the garden gate. Then I rolled a tree trunk underneath to make a sort of fulcrum quite near that. And I climbed on top of the gate and jumped on the far end of the plank. It was a lovely feeling, you know. It's really one of the most exciting moments of my life. It's a bit difficult getting down from the tree, but it was the whole thing was very. It didn't bend the plank at all, not permanently. Then I remembered that you can bend planks with steam. So I took the plank into the kitchen and put the kettle on and held the pointed end in the steam. And it is terribly interesting, this, that if you hold an oak plank 6 foot long, you hold the pointed end in the steaming kettle for 8 minutes, then withdraw it sharply, the other end of the plank goes straight through the kitchen window. So I gave up the idea of water skis. Then I thought if I could make these oak planks into a piece of furniture, that'd be the obvious thing. A chest of drawers would be ideal. But two planks. I mean, how can one make a chest of drawers? So then I had an inspiration. And with 5 weekends and 2 evenings, I cut 2 little strips off the top of one plank. And I put the planks upright, 6 foot high, glued 200 empty matchboxes in between them. And I had a very, 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 very high, rather narrow chest of drawers. But I did have my present, and I looked at it, and I thought, well, my two bits of oak did make a present for Jack. And it really, that's when I said this proverb, it brought it to life. You see, all oak and no ply makes Jack a tall boy.
By your applause, Frank Muir wins the contest of stories, and I get a quite unusable present. And that brings us to a final score in which Frank Muir and Dennis Powell just scrape home by 1.5 mark from Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden, and it also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dilys Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.